When you visit someone who is dying, first of all, be humble. We have to recognize that we are treading on mysterious ground.
Elizabeth Elliot says, "It takes a steadfast heart to allow the Lord to let His will be done in us. But I want that kind of heart." Elizabeth adds, "I say it to Him over and over. Lord, do anything You want with me, at any cost." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Music of His Promises, Listening to God with Love, Trust, and Obedience.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot talking with you again today about heaven. Wonderful subject of heaven. I keep being asked, what do I think heaven is like? Well, I think it's better than anything we could ever imagine. It is eternal. We read that Jesus Christ Himself came from heaven. We read about angels from heaven, bread from heaven, light from heaven. Heaven is a grand hope that we hold. Heaven is God's dwelling place. And heaven is very real and very sure. When Jesus was preparing His disciples for His departure from earth, He said, "In My Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going to prepare a place for you." Heaven is a place where the will of God is always done. It's a place of rewards. It's a bank for depositing our treasures. The Bible says, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be." And if all your treasures are here on earth, your heart will not be in heaven, will it? There's love there. There's joy, there's peace, there's singing. The Bible speaks of the whole family in heaven and earth. God's family is divided. Some are here on earth, some are in heaven, and yet we are united as one in Jesus Christ. I've mentioned that I have two husbands in heaven, and one of those husbands has a wife there. I need to explain, my first husband, Jim Elliott, was killed in South America. My second husband, Addison Leach, died of cancer. I was married to Jim for 27 months. I was married to Ad for 4.5 years. I now have a husband to whom I've been married for more than 15 years, so I'm very grateful for these three men, and I assure you I didn't get any of them. God gave them to me as gifts of grace, and I certainly didn't deserve any of them. But having two husbands in heaven and one of them having a wife there, you can be sure I do think a lot about heaven. I dream about those husbands. My husband Lars is very big-hearted and broad-minded, and he often brings up the subjects of Jim and Ad. We don't have any barriers or any inhibitions at all about talking about my first two. Ad had been married for 32 years, and he had three daughters. Actually, they had had four daughters, so come to think about it, he has a daughter in heaven as well, a little baby who died when she was very small. And his wife, when she got cancer, my husband Ad was told that she had probably about 3 months to live. Well, she was a very strong woman. He used to say she was the last of the Puritans. She was from Massachusetts. And she told him at that time that she would not die until she had raised her children. She lived for 11 years until her youngest daughter was 21 years old. And so, of course, I think of Ad united again with his first wife in heaven. And I have to confess that it boggles my mind to try to figure out what the relationships will be when we get there. But I'm not the least bit worried about it, not in the least, because I have no doubt whatsoever that God has arranged things absolutely perfectly. But I wanted to give you a few things that really helped me when my husband Jim died, and they were just as applicable during Ad's dying process. Jim was killed suddenly. Ad died over a period of 10 months from the time that his cancer was diagnosed. So maybe those of you who love someone who is dying will be helped by some of these things that the Lord taught me at that time. I would hope that you will take every opportunity to point that person to Christ and to heaven. Now, if they do not believe, you might ask them if you could read them some of the Bible passages, or just in a very casual and simple way, talk to them about your own hope of heaven. When you visit someone who is dying, first of all, be humble. We have to recognize that we are treading on mysterious ground. We don't know what's going on in that person's heart and mind. We certainly don't go pretending that we have pat answers. Remember that you're there to give yourself to this person. If what this person needs is just to have you sit there in silence, be willing to sit in silence. If there's something you can do for them, do it. If there's nothing you can do for them, sit there. Perhaps hold their hand. Perhaps they would like to have you pray for them. And there aren't very many people who will refuse to be prayed for. Some will. And don't be crushed by that. Just pray silently. But you're there to give yourself, to give your time, to give your sympathy and your understanding. Your visit should be a gift, not a demand. And by all means, make it short, unless the person himself asks you to stay. One of the big mistakes that people make is feeling that they have to go and pay a long visit in a hospital or in a sick room, and that can be the worst mistake. And as I would hope all of us know, you don't sit on the bed. Nurses are taught that, but sometimes we're thoughtless. So that's the first thing. You're there just to give yourself, just to be with the person. Your very presence lets them know that you care. Don't think that you have to say something very spiritual or very philosophical or very helpful. Just the fact that you are there lets them know that you haven't forgotten them and that you do love them. You're interested. So what to do? What to actually do? One thing you can do is to listen. I noticed that my husband, Ad, wanted to talk about his illness. And so anyone who would come and tell me and say to him, tell me how you feel, that was the greatest relief in the world for him just to tell how he felt. And by all means, don't talk about health. It's a good idea to touch the person gently, tactfully, just touch their hand. I remember how the woman who was in charge of the X-ray waiting room when my husband was having radiation treatments, she would always touch the patients when she came to call for them, take their arm, take their hand. Sometimes she put her arm around them as she led them into the X-ray room. And I think of my dear friend Meyer Walters. She's a Welsh doctor, a Christian, and she would come daily when my husband was dying to visit him. Not that either she or I imagined that she was going to be able to do anything medically to cure him, but just her presence was like an angel from God, and she would always take Ad's hand and say to him, tell me how you feel. The doctor who was the chemotherapist was not a Christian, and the difference between Meyer, who was a Christian, and this doctor were like night and day, because he was quite bankrupt spiritually and did not want me asking any questions that he couldn't answer. And, of course, most of the questions he couldn't answer. He didn't know exactly when Ad was going to die, but he knew he was going to die. The third thing, there is the necessity for hope. Remember that our hope is in God, not in medicine, not in the doctors. And we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We do not know what the prognosis is. And my friend Mary Ev Ketchum, who had lost her husband to cancer, said to me one day, close to the time when my husband actually did die, she said to me, Elizabeth, just remember one thing. You really don't know that he's going to die. But we can trust him. And we know that if he does, God will be there. Then be thankful for the blessing of routines, just meals, pills, radiation treatments, a bath, if you have anything to do with this person's care. I was thankful that there were meals to cook and beds to change and bed baths to give. There were just ordinary down-to-earth concrete things to do. Was he willing to put his feet on the floor today? Well, that was a good sign. Could he sit up in a chair? So I would help him sit up in the chair. Did he hope to live or did he hope to die? Well, there comes that point when the person who is desperately hoping to live reaches that point where he hopes to die. Be understanding and face both the possibilities. Another thing that my husband needed was assurance of pardon. He said to me, "Do you really think God can forgive my sins?" And so I would talk to him about that inexhaustible grace. Loneliness. There is a loneliness about illness. Ad said to me, "It's two different worlds. You live in the world of health. You don't know anything about the world I live in. And there's no concourse between them." And then there comes that terrible desolation of doubt. Remember that Jesus himself cried out from the cross, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" And I found that there were times when Ad wanted me to read the Bible and times when he didn't. And when he wanted me to, I usually read to him from the Psalms. You will find the Psalms speak most directly and most clearly and sympathetically about pain and suffering. The psalmist himself seems to have been in terrible situations, many of which exactly express the dying person's feelings. And so I would read to him from the Psalms, and there were other times when he would say, "No, I don't want you to read the Bible." And then I would say, "Would you like me to pray?" And I think he always said yes to that, as far as I remember. Don't evade the subject of heaven and death with a person who is dying.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Discipline, The Glad Surrender, and No Graven Image. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.